Hello, and welcome to 42 Minutes. This is Doug. It's May 1st, 2012, and today we have the special pleasure of doing two international calls, one in the morning and one in the evening. And Will is finding every sink today at the Black Keys concert, and so he's not joining us. And since he's away, I'm going to turn the show over to Alan Abadesa Green and Justin Morgan, and they're going to talk to Mark Golding in the United Kingdom. And so, without further ado, away you go.
Good morning. Alan and I have the similar timing, so I'll go ahead and just introduce things. This is Justin Morgan, and we're on the line with Mark, as we mentioned. Alan, would you like to say any welcome things?
Oh, I just want to say good morning to everybody and how great it is to hear all of your voices again, and Mark, to hear your voice for the first time. It's been great getting to know you over the last few weeks and months, and it's really looking forward to speaking to you today.
Well, thank you for inviting me, guys. It's my honor, my privilege to sort of be hooking up with you fellas at this interesting time. You know, there's great stuff happening, you know, here and over there in the States as well, and the more I feel we connect and share, the more we're going to sort of progress and advance each other's pathways. You know, it's my privilege, guys, really, to meet you.
Oh, thanks, Mark. And it has been really interesting to get to know you over the past couple months as well. I know you, Alan, and I, as well as a lot of the other people involved with the Sync book, have really connected and began to share artwork. And I was curious if you could give us a little background on when you first started working on artwork. Was this something you've always done, or is this something that kind of came about recently? Or?
Well, it came about recently, Justin, about last springtime, I think February or March last year. I'd just come through a sort of a couple of serious traumas in my life and kind of effectively rebirthed. And I'd never drawn creatively in my life, and I picked up a pen and drew an outline of human body, and it's just gone on from there. And I had no idea the way it would transform my life and my own understanding and my ability, I think, to be able to communicate feelings and emotions and expressions through pen and paper. It's a journey for me, man, something I had no idea was coming, no idea at all. And part of the beautiful thing is that it reaches out and enables me to communicate with other people around the world. This wouldn't happen without these drawings. So there must be something contained within them that's sort of coming from a source or other. You know, and it sounds a bit trite probably, but I'm just a sort of vehicle really in some way. You know, I'm just a mechanism by which this visual expression's manifesting. You know, it's completely new to me, and everyone takes me somewhere else. And sometimes I think to myself, well, I'm just drawing the same thing again and again and again and again. But I speak to Samantha often about it, and she said, well, they're like snowflakes. Everyone's different. There's no repeat in them. But, sorry, Justin.
No, it's just amazing that this has just kind of been a recent thing that's come about, because I really connect and enjoy with looking at the illustrations that you do, and you do such a large volume of them. It seems to be something that is kind of coming naturally, and doing it, as you're saying, to where the art is kind of, I can just kind of tell that it does flow through. I was just going to add, for anyone listening, a lot of Mark's illustrations are on his Facebook page at Healing Magic. And if you're connected, I assume probably to 42 Minutes or the Sync book through there, you should be able to find the Healing Magic Facebook page.
Indeed. Can I throw something in here? I mean, Mark, the idea of sort of this artwork coming through you as a medium of sorts, I totally understand, and I could see that very clearly. But just to clarify, has the illustrations themselves, have they been progressing? Do you feel like your skill has been progressing, or did you just sort of start off with this talent that you didn't know you had?
No, it's progressing, Alan. Each one seems to find a new level, a new way, a new sort of harmony on the paper. And it's akin to polishing the diamond. You know, every time I pick up the pencil, every time I pick up the pen, some subtle refinement manifests, and virtually all of them take progress and lead somewhere new. And my confidence in expressing the things I wish to express is growing each time I finish one. And you know, I'm not sort of overtly sort of into this sort of channeling bit or something. It's all a little bit woo-woo for me, but it seems to be, well, it just seems to be that there's so many people trying to do work with geometry and sound tonality and light and color, and that it seems to be part of a almost a worldwide movement of people that are finding drawing these talents or, you know, these expressions together. And some way that there's a joint communication going on, because what delights me most about this is that everybody that's involved in this sort of form of visual and sonic communication, and it's, you know, physical expression communication, wants to share it. And the sort of paradigm of limiting it to oneself, and also being selfish with it and demanding payment for them and all this sort of thing, seems to be on the wane of it. And interestingly enough, since I've been doing this, I've, you know, again, it sounds so sort of corny, but I've found that my circumstances, my financial circumstances, as limited as they are being fed almost by sort of grace of the universe, something like that, that's enabling me to find the time to sit down and do this every day. Otherwise, I would have to be running around earning a living. But somehow, I can earn my money. I'm just trickling by, but I'm earning enough money and I'm satisfied with what I've got. You know, so it's kind of like it's a sort of quid pro quo, a balance of giving and receiving, something like that, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. And it's funny, I actually experienced, I know we've talked some online about this, but I experienced kind of the similar thing. I was joking with Alan last night that when I need money, if I sit down and do a piece of artwork, I automatically, it's almost like a joke with myself that I'll get freelance work in order to kind of help pay bills and stuff. So there does certainly seem to be an element of when you're doing or following the right path that things kind of fall in line and just kind of work themselves out.
Yeah, that seems to be the way. And, you know, for yourself and for whoever might listen to this, it's so encouraging to hear this from you and know it from my own experience. And I truly believe that if everyone could find the time to express themselves, you know, physically in some way, verbally, movement, in nature, whatever, they will find that they're taken care of, and the sort of, you know, the pursuit of the sort of money man, the money machine, is not working. It's not working in terms of sort of our individual growth and capacities to learn and experience. Otherwise, we sort of paint ourselves into these corners whereby we're sort of limited by what we think we can do because we have to earn money. And I've kind of managed to negotiate and navigate my way through it with hitherto previously no skill whatsoever, no talent whatsoever, you know. So it's, you know, if I can do it, anyone can do it, you know.
Yeah, it is good to hear.
Yeah. Maybe perhaps you made the comment that a lot of the people who are claiming to channel something was a bit woo-woo. You know, maybe we can start to open up the idea, well, what do you think it is people are tapping into? Because I don't know if that's a bit of a big topic, but it seems to me in the last few years what I've noticed is this idea of once you start to recognize symbols, just this idea of geometry you mentioned, but even for myself with even more abstract symbols, by doing sync work that I've done, it has seemed to unlock a hidden potential in my brain that has opened me up to a sort of bigger information set, if I can call it that. And what I notice every day is I see more and more people who can speak eloquently on this subject, and it seems that it's just this idea of learning to recognize what is there, and that it opens up some sort of potential And I really think of it as a, like an unlocking part of the brain. But I'm curious how you would phrase that, or what you see it as.
Well, I agree with you 100%, Alan. That mirrors my own experience entirely. Within that sort of paradigm of the learning experience, I think each of us have our own archetypal series and inhibitions and obstacles through which we have to sort of pass or transfer. So what works for you is peculiar to your own positioning in the universe, and what works for me is my own individualistic positioning within the universe. And so, but there's no difference in it whatsoever. And whether this is linked into this kind of consciousness raising collective thing or not, I don't know. But it is a series of expressions that I'm experiencing within, that I'm putting out, but I have to feel them and recognize them. And mine seem to fit into a particular sort of set, the geometrical and mandala set. Yours appear to fit into the set of popular media publishing. But I just think they're both the same ways, that they're leading to the same destination. But we have our idiosyncratic sort of views on the world. You know, you live in the middle of a big city. I live in the sort of countryside. So we're working through the sort of resonances that sort of create the sort of static, sort of the energetic that holds us in place or appears to hold us in place.
Yeah, absolutely. I get that. You know, something we had a conversation, Doug and Justin, myself, and a few others last summer had a conversation. We all went and got together in a cabin out in the woods, and it was really nice just to be away from all the media and from that sort of symbol saturation and get in touch with a more natural version of it. But a conversation we came back to was this idea that even within the cities, it does seem to be a reflection of that same natural resonance, if you will. There does seem to be an expression of it, even if it's a little more, shall we say, buried, or you have to look a little harder to find it. But I think there is definitely, we are kind of all swimming in the same information, you know, again, whatever we want to call this, plemora, ether, matrix, whatever phrase suits you best.
Well, yeah, I agree with you completely, Alan. I suppose what we're doing, we're working with the sort of four primary elements, earth, wind, fire, and air. Earth, wind, fire, and water. And as such, the way in which we witness and experience them in our daily life, the manifestations of those elements in the sort of in the space we inhabit, is the way we can adapt and understand to these. If we're working with a bit of elemental feeling, magic, if you like, we express them, we feel them, and the way we communicate with them is due to our circumstances. You'd go into the woods is the perfect place to get raw, to get naked psychically amongst the elements. You know, I've followed some advice that Justin gave me about. I go and play in the woods sort of most weekends, sort of, and he gave me some advice about working with elements, and it does. It outdoors seems to work. You can feel the air, feel the water, feel the earth under your feet. But in the city, it's a different level of experience. But they're the same four elements nonetheless. So we are paralleling in our way. And as my friend John would say, you know, you're urban shaman. You know, you're the urban shaman. You're working in that city environment. And in some ways, your job is much, much harder than my job. You know, my job is kind of sitting here and I can watch life. Whereas you're sort of, you're hard up against the edge, really, and you've got to be a lot sharper to work with the symbology and the sort of the titanic energetic that exists within the cities, you know, the electrical systems, the plumbing systems, the buildings, the sort of traffic. There's so much energy swirling around. It's probably pretty tough to sort of get in the zone, you know, even when you find your sort of shamanic zone, your alchemical zone, and get in there. It's quite a lot of sort of stuff to deal with, you know?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it's interesting and a good point about the elements. I actually caught Neil Kramer while he was out here doing a talk this past weekend, and he made a good point about kind of 2012 doom and gloom predictions. And he had like these four images up there, you know, of like an earthquake or a hurricane and a solar flare or something. And he was like, you know, really what we're kind of doing through the like doom outlook, not us necessarily, but culturally, is making enemies out of the four elements. And I think especially as people who have been living in cities, you know, you are kind of alienated and disconnected from that. And it certainly, it can be harder in the city to deal with that. But I am a bit envious of those who are able to live in the countryside and get out into nature more regularly.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned about the doom scenario and the sort of elements in that sense, I think that comes from a sense of resistance, and it's kind of like a fear-based predicate, something like that, which I completely understand. There's sort of so much pushing, you know, so many images pushing at one, you know, from the media, that it's very hard to disassociate oneself from them. And whatever images are coming your way, as subtle and as cool as we think we can be at sort of riding them, surfing them, you know, an aspect or a percentage of that energetic, I think, does get involved in our minds and can warp and overcome us without us realizing. You know, they're very subtle, these energies, as you know, Justin and Alan and Douglas. I'm sure you've been, you know, exposed to the elements, so to speak, in your psychic worlds. And, you know, it's not easy. And sometimes, you know, in the city, it's kind of, you know, it's freaky. You know, you're going to meet a lot more hostile people and aspects and sharp corners and things than you are in the countryside. But that's not to say that the countryside is the only way to do it, because, you know, we live our lives where we live our lives. And we're just getting on with it, aren't we? We're getting on with it, trying to, I don't know, sort of sense an attractor that's kind of got a positive outcome for us all. That's my sort of aim. That's my entire goal with this stuff, you know. You know, create a positive attractor.
Yeah. I think that kind of ties in. I'm curious about kind of like your esoteric background. Like, I know you just started doing these drawings recently. Have you always been interested in kind of esoteric studies or magical studies?
Well, no, not at all. Only in the past sort of two or three years, something like that. My sort of spiritual life, if you like, didn't start. I'm 56, by the way. My spiritual life started in my sort of early 40s, really. I was an old hippie back in the day, but it was all a bit sort of contrite and, you know, formulaic, if you like. You know, it was all very sort of dreamy and sort of wispy. But when I was about 40, I decided to give up taking drugs and drinking, and I didn't sort of have any intoxicants for 10 years. And during that 10 years, I sort of looked at a couple. During the first period of that 10 years, I looked at some sort of spiritual practices, tried a few of them, and then I picked up Buddhism, Dharma. And I sort of pretty much got involved with that for 13 years, and sort of studied the tantras, did lots of retreats, and studied to be a teacher, did full-on training with sort of Tibetan Buddhist esoteric training, which is as far out as it gets, really. But what I found later on was that I became a teacher, whereby I sat on a throne and had a shaved head. I was never a monk, but I, you know, people sort of looked to me for sort of spiritual stuff, but I didn't want to lead that role. I wanted it to be some sort of more shamanic, outside the box teacher, if you like, just sharing what I'd learned. And so I've transferred that understanding to the world of esoteric magic in a way, but it's kind of given me a firm grounding inside, whereby I know I've got a fair idea of how to navigate and understand my own mind and my own reactions within my mind. So things that might have frightened me or sort of got me on the back foot a few years ago don't seem to do so anymore. You know, I've kind of come through, so I'm happy to mix with people that are, you know, the sort of guys that want to sort of lay one on you. And I'm more mature now. I'm ready to go out and sort of re-enter the world with a sort of spiritual or esoteric magic or whatever it's called aspect, but with a sort of, you know, an agenda to sort of, I don't know, show how it can be done beautifully, you know, how to sort of really enjoy it, you know, so yeah, yeah. To denigrate anyone else's experience or anyone else's practice. But, you know, hey, I've been around the block and it's sort of, you know, I've got a deep grounding through lots of meditation retreats of, you know, how the mind works. So I'm sort of trying to progress that in my own life and share it with the drawings. It's an expression of my journey for anyone that cares, really, you know?
Yeah, that's yeah. Great.
You know, I as you said, it's not to denigrate anyone else's experience, but I do think that the idea of sitting in a space as, you know, this idea of a monk sort of sitting on a throne and, okay, I've reached this state and that's it, there does seem to be something missing there in that, as far as I can tell, someone who actually does feel a connection to something wants to get into it. You know, it's one thing to just be and experience it, and from a very Zen standpoint, that's wonderful. And there's also something to actually experiencing life and actually getting out and living it and interacting with people and trying to get them to that state and just getting your hands into the dirt, you know, actually feeling the earth, feeling just the elements around you. And it doesn't, that can be in the city or in the country, just actually interacting with life. That seems to be, whenever I've been in any dark space, it's when I retreat from that. And whenever I feel an actual connection to things is when I want to not retreat, but to engage life. And so I could totally see why, and I don't know if that's presumptuous, but I can totally see why you would then want to get out of that space and kind of re-engage life on a very sort of physical or let's just say a more raw level.
Yeah, that's right, Alan. That's how I feel. You sort of have a that's exactly how I feel about it. And, you know, getting my hands dirty, doing sort of dirty work, if you like, it suits me. It suits me. I'm quite happy to do it. And the sort of part of the process of going on long retreats and things, there's a very, very subtle element of pride comes into it. And it's so subtle. I didn't realize it was sort of building up for years and years and years. It's a sort of, in my, you know, maybe not in everyone's case, but in my case, a sort of subtle aspect of arrogance or pride that just slowly gets into one's ego. It's an ego reinforcing, even though you do all this stuff about seeing through the ego and transforming it into a sort of blissful state of mind. In my case, my peculiar case, an arrogance, even though it's so subtle, and it was that very arrogance that precipitated a sort of breakdown in my life, a sort of a nexus, a transformation point, which precipitated in turn this drawing process. I had to go through what is described as the long dark night of the soul. And, you know, hey, it was that. It was an inwinding of apparent circumstances. But I was so razor sharp within my mind, I thought I could fend off all these appearances until I was painted into a corner infinitesimally small, and I had no choice but to go under. I lost the battle. But fortunately, I kind of didn't die at that point. I kind of re-manifested within this world. I thought I was going to die. You know, it was a near death. It was a death experience. So you're absolutely right. It was my, through that process of sitting and training for all those years, I still had to have one layer to crack. Not to suggest that I'd finished the job, but I had to go through that final stage. I had to sort of be humbled down on my knees, a sort of cracked up wreck, to be able to sort of recognize it within myself. I was too strong, so I had to break.
It's funny how that works. I find a similar thing, like with my own artwork, that if I'm like sitting down and intentionally like trying to do something from like the ego standpoint, it becomes extremely difficult to kind of get the project out. But sometimes I almost, if I can just almost like remove myself from it, or like my sense of self from it, that then sometimes the artwork just flows through naturally.
Oh yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, I definitely feel that.
Yeah, but your artwork's on a different level, Justin. You know, there's such power in your work, man. I can't tell you how much impact there is in the artwork you do. You know, I'm sort of bouncing it back at you a bit here, but you're phenomenal. And, you know, I don't quite know what you do with your life in between these artworks, but hey, man, you know, you're world class, and I'd love to see more of your stuff, you know?
Oh, well, yeah, I appreciate that. And it's funny, I know we've talked some online, that oftentimes every time I sit down to do a piece, I'm like, okay, I don't know what I'm doing, you know, like you just kind of start anew and start fresh in that way. And then, you know, stuff kind of works itself out, but it's been inspiring, and you're so prolific with the amount of drawings that you do, and I see so much new work from you, and it's even nice to hear that, you know, there's other eyes seeing stuff. It's been kind of inspiring to get me doing more artwork. And I was curious in regard to follow up on that, like how many drawings have you done so far? Like how many do you plan to do?
Well, there's hundreds, Justin, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. I don't count them. I almost don't look at them after I've done them. I photograph them, put them in a folder. I'm nurturing. You saw a little video I made a year or so back, which is quite sort of lumpy and bumpy, really. I'm kind of nurturing an idea now to sort of put this new sequence together as a sort of little movie or something, in some way. But I, you know, part of my sort of dream is to sort of have it playing on a sort of backdrop in a club or a space, or, you know, an art space or something like that, with the appropriate music, whether it's sort of banging trance or dreamy whale music or whatever. And see if the alchemy within it, if the transformation process would affect the viewer in the way I intended, you know, if it would progress them spiritually, if it would serve to open up their eyes from some of the rigid paradigms. Because, you know, the exploration of geometry and things is, I think it's a precursor. You know, if wind it right back to sort of, Archimedes and Plato with their understanding of geometry. And I know we've sort of, Justin, you and I have sort of touched on this a little bit with our email. But I kind of think that they're sort of taught paradigms in themselves, and there's something more subtle and organic that's been subsumed and sort of limited by this geometrical understanding. So I'm trying to explore the geometry to see what lies within, because, you know, I'm not sure if this is the right word, if I trust those guys, you know, with their understanding and their recognition of how things work, because I think they're sort of limiting in the way that we can engage with our world. It's almost as if that's the only way it can work. And I think there's something softer and gentler within it. I'm not quite sure, but that's what I'm trying to understand. You know, sort of just as, you know, I know you're quite interested in Crowley's work and how he tries to subsume and sort of deconstruct the teachings of certain aspects of modern religion. And indeed, what I'm doing is kind of looking at it in that way, but trying to sort of wind it even further back and try and understand that whatever we're taught, whatever we're told, is not the ultimate truth. And so all the legends, all the myths behind all those ones, there's something more. And if we follow virtually any legend or myth, I think we're getting entangled in someone else's version of how it works. You know, Alan, talking about, we've had a conversation about the tarot cards, and I actually think that there's a set of archetypes within there that appear to be perfect and complete, but it could well be that that's a bit of a red herring. I don't know if you know that phrase, red herring.
Yes.
A bit of a false flag to the totality of the experience. So I'm kind of quite looking forward to working with you on that idea to sort of deconstruct it as well. You know, there's I try not to accept any taught expression of how things are until I've completely unwound it within myself and tried to find it for my own expression. And I think that's the case for all of us. I think we're all in a process of working through the glass onion, you know, unpeeling the layers.
Excellent. Yeah, I think that's a great point that they do become dogmatic, you know, and at some point, you know, someone created the tarot cards or created the Tree of Life or different Kabbalah stuff, and they oftentimes are adhered to as kind of dogmatic, but it's certainly worth exploring and modifying and hacking and rearranging and interpreting and stuff like that.
I think about all the time is the idea that it's not that any particular system is, you know, the ideas themselves are fantastic. The idea of a Christian ideology is beautiful on its surface as one of forgiveness and, you know, from like a Gnostic standpoint, the idea of liberation. But we could see how a modern church can step in and turn that into something very dark and you know, authoritarian. The same with the idea of a lot of the Illuminists, you know, had this idea of elevating themselves. And then you see as they inspire people coming to this new world, America, and then what do? But take slaves and kill brown people and make a terrible mess of things. And it seems so easy for things to be perverted once they either become dogmatic or misunderstood. And what I think seems to be the natural course here is to kind of, again, re-engage away from the dogma and go back to that source and figure out what it is that these ideas actually spring from. Because those ideas themselves are fairly beautiful, or at least what they represent, yet the things that they kind of turn into when they just become some sort of book of rules very often turn ugly. That's why I really appreciate what Mark's doing. He seems to be reimagining a lot of these processes, different alchemical stages or different elements of the sort of progress, chakras and so on. He's kind of meditating on each one of them and re-engaging them at their source level and letting, you know, kind of whatever comes through, come through. And it by just being the sort of mandala that someone else has to meditate on themselves, it takes away all that dogma. It could mean something, essentially, it can mean something different to anyone. But if they're actually really peering through it, they're going to get that same glimpse of whatever that actual source truth is, rather than whatever source truth has been reinterpreted by priests and different con men throughout the ages.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I wanted to maybe revisit something Mark mentioned about doing like another video. I think there's almost an interesting idea in you showing, like, because I watched the last video you did where you show your artwork kind of progressing from point A, and it kind of ramps up and it evolves as it goes. And I think that almost could have like a healing effect of like showing someone the progression of the soul or progression of this kind of mandala type artwork. So I'm curious to hear where you maybe see your artwork going. Or I guess first, maybe like what are you drawing right now? And then maybe the second part would be where do you see yourself kind of, what type of artwork do you want to be working on like a year from now?
Well, at the moment I'm drawing a series of definitions from a text called Understanding the Mind, which is a highly complex and detailed sort of it's a sutra that illustrates and describes and defines all the aspects of how the mind engages with the world, but it's from a Buddhist perspective. Well, not but, and it's from a Buddhist perspective. So I'm kind of working through that process at the moment. But with regard to what I'll be doing in a year's time, I haven't got a clue, man. I have absolutely no idea, and I can't fit a trajectory on it at all. I just know I've just got to keep going at it. And back to what Alan said about the sort of the self-revelation to the source. What I think is important is that even though I'm manifesting these drawings for a purpose for myself, I think every individual has the innate capacity to do this for themselves as well. So just as my expression represents a mechanism for me, just as the various authors of various books throughout the time have created books that work for them. It's for each individual to be empowered to manifest their own path to the source. And that's the point of it, Alan. It's that, you know, dogma screams against me. It's for each and everybody, each individual to find it for themselves. And that's the process, you know, that's the continual engagement with the living process, I think. And the expression of it is a way to find one's own source point, which I assume is going to be the same for everybody when we get there. That's my feeling.
Beautifully said. Can I ask one technical question? I had seen in some of your photos, one of your earlier photos, you had this idea of this Victorian crank, this kind of kaleidoscope machine, and different drafting tools on your table. Can I just ask from a technical standpoint, what are you using to make these illustrations?
The only things I'm using is a compass and, you know, a pair of compasses and a 60 degree and a 45 degree triangle, and that's it. That's all I use. That crank thing was an antique object that I kind of liked, and it amused me, and I put it in that photograph just to sort of say hi to the guys, you know, in a sort of slightly proto-punk, you know, steampunk they call it here in England, sort of steampunk sort of retro magic Jules Verne sort of scene. That's all. That's just a friendly nudge. But in terms of the sort of kaleidoscopic sense, because that was part of a kaleidoscopic process. The kaleidoscopic process, you know, it works with lights in against colour, rather like the rose windows of the cathedrals and things. And I kind of think, and I've chatted to Justin about this, I sort of like the idea of somehow getting some of these mandala images almost as lenses for glasses or something, that what we might call rose-tinted glasses, whereby that one could transform one's mood by looking at the world through these mandalas. So, you know, a sort of grander sense of that would be projecting the process on a wall and sitting down for 20 minutes and watching the progress, watching the progression of images and seeing what happened within the viewer's mind, see if they came away feeling, you know, tripped out, or whether they felt disorientated, or whether they felt, you know, liberated. You know, that's the sort of process. That's what I'm trying to reveal, is sort of is an inner process that is beautiful, that's absolutely exquisite. And it's not that I don't have my, you know, difficult and troubled times, you know, day by day, but the overwhelming process of my life is evolving in this way. And to represent that to other people is great, but it's not the way, it's just my way, it's just my expression.
Doug, yeah, sorry, just Justin, just to let you know, Doug gave us, we got about 4 minutes left in this, so
yes,
Justin,
yeah. I think that's great what you were saying, Mark, about sharing, and I think that's all we really can be expected to do is share what's going on our journey, you know, in an expressive way. I wanted to kind of, as you were talking about the prisms, I wanted to kind of get into the little experiment you did with the using prisms and light and refracting involving some of your artwork. We're kind of running out of time, but if you could just say a couple words about your garden water prism experiment.
That was entirely spontaneous. I had the idea of, you know, I love working with water, Justin. You know, you've turned me onto water as being a living element. I kind of knew it, but I didn't know it until you really reminded me of it. And I just had this idea of, I found this box of prisms that had been cut by a lapidary, a stone cutter in the 1840s. And this guy, a guy called John Sanderson, was a sort of light magician, if you like, of his time. And he cut some of these prisms for the guy, a Scottish man that invented the kaleidoscope in the 1840s. And I sort of bumped, you know, I found this box at an antiques fair. And I kind of thought, you know, I've got to try and work with some light in the way that sort of the Victorians might have done it. So I went into a shop and found a test tube with a hexagonal base and new. As soon as I saw it, I thought, ah, that's the centerpiece for the artwork. So I kind of got the hexagonal-based test tube and designed an image round it, a sort of kaleidoscopic mandala image. And then on a beautiful sunny day, I just went down into the garden with this big box of sort of cut crystals and gemstones and arranged them. And all of a sudden, the light started bouncing around, and it was a visual alchemy. Visual, it was great fun. And unfortunately, the image that I captured wasn't the final one. I was a bit distracted and missed the one where it all bounced around. You know, I kind of got this sort of network of light spinning around, which is great. And I have to say, Justin, I have to say, you've inspired me. It's our communications about our honest discussions about spirituality, alchemy, and transformation that have triggered these explorations within me. You know, I wouldn't have done that without you on the other side of the ocean. As crazy as it seems, man,
yeah.
That's something that's happened because of our sort of email dialogues, and that's the way things can transfer without us realizing it, it's great.
Yeah, I love it. I don't mean to cut you off. I think that's kind of what we're doing here too, is sharing ideas and bouncing them around like a prism. And maybe that's a good metaphor for the type of work like all of us are doing, that we, and it kind of is reflecting in an interesting way. But do you want to give out your website address or anything as we wrap up here?
Yeah, just go to Facebook and look for Healing Magic and you'll find me. But before we go, hats off to Alan Green. Alan Green, what you're doing in pulling things together with that sync book, it attracted me from right across the world. And keep on it, man. You're doing a great job. You're holding it, you're navigating it, and the more people you can pull in, you're gonna do fantastic things, man. And I want the sync book press to grow and grow and grow. You're going to do great things, man.
Thank you, brother.
Best wishes to you, man. And Douglas, I've just heard that you got a book published, like The Labyrinth. We've got to love a labyrinth, Fantastic, man. I love you guys, I love, and one day maybe we'll get together in the woods together and party, A very serious thought.
Certainly.
That would be wonderful.
That's it, guys. We're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks for Justin and Alan for hosting today. You guys did great. Thank you. Talk to you later today.